It's hard to see yourself represented on the silver screen. In a world with less available roles to us, this industry can be so mean. So we're gonna make some changes in this town. Turn the male-driven media upside down. There's nothing that a woman can't do, so act like a girl, we're here to support you.
Welcome back to the Act Like a Girl podcast, everyone. This is Susie Dunn.
And Tracy Walker.
And we are here with...
Celia Finkelstein.
Yay!
I love your last name. Thanks. Finkelstein.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're talking about body image. Mm-hmm. So I guess let's just like start. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Florida, in Pensacola, the Redneck Riviera. It's like in the panhandle, like lower Alabama.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like real Southern.
Right.
Yeah, I grew up there. My parents met in Tallahassee, and then we all lived in Italy for like a hot second. And then my mother and I moved back to Pensacola after she and my dad separated. And then he lived in Italy for a little while longer and then came back to Tallahassee. So that was my whole growing up, was like that Southern panhandle thing.
Mm. How is that? Is it as horrible as they say it is?
I mean, possibly worse.
Really?
No. I mean, it's not the best. Like, it's not the best. It's not the best place if you are a
progressive,
socially conscious nerd girl Jew who likes theater. Do you know, like, it's right. A really weird place to grow up.
Jews,
if you're that.
They got a Jew community in
there. Are like 12 of us.
Oh, I was getting ready to say.
There's a synagogue and a temple, which are two. The synagogue is conservative and the temple is reform. And I would say total, there are maybe like 200 families. Or when I was growing up, there were maybe 200 families. But like, it's also a Navy town. So you get a lot of Navy people who would sort of come in for like 2 years or whatever, and or for whatever. And then kind of they would come and go. So it's a pretty decent sort of number of Jews, I guess.
Well, also, like, I feel like the Jewish community is the kind of community where, like, when you like come together.
Oh,
so you like all know each other.
And you kind of all find each other.
Yeah, exactly. They build that synagogue and that temple.
Yeah, for sure.
I love that about the Jewish community, though. Man,
it's the same thing with the Black community, don't you feel?
No, we don't stick together. I think it's because our past, like, we've been so divided.
Right.
You know, on every level. And that it's just hard for us to like, I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. So growing up in Florida, how, like, talk about what that was like, especially like with the scope of body image in your,
Well, Pensacola is a beach town. So the official motto is like no shirt, no shoes, no problem.
Right.
So like no one is like wearing clothes and everyone is like, at least in my perspective and from my memory, everyone was like really thin and beautiful and tan. And it's a really, it's interesting because it's a strange town. It's like got a really amazing, like thriving arts community and gay community. And then also there's like this very like religious, white, rich
that
community.
That is just Florida in general.
Yeah.
Like,
but like it feels to me like Pensacola is this weird microcosm where like we have a church that takes up like three city blocks.
Jesus.
Yeah, and then you also just have this amazing theater that's like 4 or 5 blocks away that like was my savior growing up. It was
right.
A place that I felt at home.
Yeah.
So it was this really strange place. But I like, for me growing up there, everyone is really beautiful and like everyone's going to the beach every minute. And I always just felt like really fat and short and ugly and Jewish. Like it was very clear that I was Jewish. Like I was called Jew in middle school.
Jesus.
So like, I just felt very other. And then I grew up, I was overweight. I was 135 pounds at 10 years old. So, and then I only went up from there. So I just was, I just grew up really kind of like not ever feeling pretty enough, feminine enough. I wasn't blonde. I couldn't dress in the Gap like my friends because I was too fat. Like I was shopping at Lane Bryant at 10, you know, stuff like that. So it was like, I just felt very,
Are you an only child?
I am an only child.
So that adds to that.
Yeah. And like, well, and also like my family, we had a family business and we all grew up 15 minutes, like, or we all lived 15 minutes from each other. So my cousins and I were sort of raised in as close a way as you can possibly be raised.
Like siblings.
Yeah. But also like that meant that we were sort of like my cousin whom I love. And like, we had a sort of moment a few years ago where we were like, I thought you hated me, you know, like where we were like, but you,
my brother and I did that.
Yeah. Cause we grew up like I said, you know, like she's the smart one or she was the pretty one and I was the smart one, which is like, so not the case, but But like,
they played y'all.
Yeah. Well, a little bit. I don't think anyone did it in a malicious way. But yeah. I just think it's like, you know, you just kind of put people in boxes. Yeah.
Right.
She was like tall and blonde and beautiful.
It's easy.
And it's easy.
Oh, that's the pretty one.
And I remember like very clearly one time at a party, one of my grandfather's birthday parties. I think he had just turned 60 or 70 or something. And someone asked to take a picture. It was my grandfather, my cousin, and me. And I think I was like maybe 16. I had to be like 18. She was like 14 or something like that. And the guy who was taking the picture was, he literally said about her, he's like, this one's very beautiful. And then like, it was as if I wasn't even in the picture.
Wow.
And that stuck for so long.
And it was as if she was an object.
Yeah. She was an object and I didn't exist.
How could it not? When you're totally being like, ignored.
Was like, exactly. Yeah. And that to me was such a crystallization of how we grew up with each other. And it's not her fault. Certainly it's not my fault. But I think we bought into it for a really long time. So those relationships were a little bit difficult. At least on my end, I don't want to speak for her, but like on my end, they were a little bit difficult. And so I did feel very alone as a kid, like being an only child where like my parents really treated me as an adult. And so I spent a lot of time with adults and like having adult conversations and reading adult books and watching adult movies. You know what
just
I mean?
Just being
like,
a little adult.
Just like a little adult, which
because kids are so fucking mean.
Well, yeah. And so I isolated and I sort of went, you know, I just became like this little weirdo. And that combined with like being fat and like kind of, you know, like kind of like my arms were too hairy. You know what I mean? All the things I could find wrong with me. Like my arms are too hairy. My hair is too curly. My whatever. And I was really heavy. So I just grew up like, God, hating myself.
Pissed, yeah.
And angry. Yeah. And then got really angry as a teenager and just went full. Like I would wear, my grandparents owned a men's clothing store. So I would shop in our store. So I would look as traditionally masculine as I could. And I wore Doc Martens and I dyed my hair purple. And, you know, I just went like full, like
fuck y'all.
Just, yeah, everyone can just die. Cause I was really angry and felt lonely and didn't know how to say, I did know how to say it for a while. And anytime I'd express it, everyone would be like, you're a teenager.
That's what you're supposed to feel. Yeah. Like,
yeah. But
no, this is different.
This is different. Yeah. So, yeah.
And then you went to college. Where did you go to college?
Yeah, I went to college. I went to Rollins College in Winter Park, which is just outside of Orlando, Florida.
Yeah, you made it. You made it to college. You made it through high school.
I did make it through. Well, high school, interestingly enough, like middle school was where I was tortured.
Middle school was, yeah.
Middle school
is the worst.
It's the worst.
Our middle school was ridiculous.
Yeah. People are so mean in middle school. So mean.
They are it's really awful.
Because you still have the like child brain where you can say anything.
Right.
And then, smart. You're getting smarter.
That
so
part
like
of your life where you just are trying to be cool. Right. And you want to be cool. So you'll sell anybody out.
Yeah. Right.
But yeah, high school, I went to this, like I was in this program called International Baccalaureate. So we were inside of a larger public school, but it was a really tiny program. And so we started with like 120 people in my class, ended with 70. So we knew everyone and we were all nerds. Like that was the point. Like it was all like,
that's amazing.
It was so academically rough that like, we're all nerds. So like, not there wasn't like a hierarchy of nerds once we all
got
into that.
Of course, right.
But we were all such total nerds.
Had a
and
safe
like,
place. Though.
Yeah. Like we that's were the awesome kind of people who took like foreign language classes for electives. That's we were awesome. Like, I'm also taking German and French
that's
and,
awesome.
You know, like,
that's
so we
great
were total losers. So high school actually was great. And that's where I found drama club and like, that's where, you know,
you found all your other weirdos.
And so like high school was where I felt at home. And then college, I followed a boy to college. Like I thought that we did end up getting married. We're not married anymore, but like, I was like, he's the love of my life and this is
You've been married?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And like, so I was just like, this is it. So I followed him to college and that's how I ended up there. But it was a fine school.
You had a lot of life living. You lived a lot.
I think she's older than you think she is.
That's also probably.
She looks baby face. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, which I'm not going to cop to. Married?
No, you do not have. I did not mean. Yeah. I did not I mean you have to say your age.
That's okay.
I just meant. Because that happens
you
to me.
That's exactly correct.
Baby face. I was like, you're baby.
Because that happens to me too. People think that I'm like 20, 21. You know, they'll be like, oh, you're so young. And I'm like, yeah, I am. But like, I doubt I'm as young as you think I am. And then when I say that, then they're like, oh, you're like 24. And I'm like, sure. Yeah. Cool. We'll go with that.
But that's also, I did get married very young. So I will say, like, we got married. Like,
how was that?
Hard and not not a smart decision. I think, and I want to be really clear and say that, like, we were best friends, and I have, you know, tremendous affection for him. And I know that I really hurt him. I didn't handle the ending of it very well. And I know that I caused him a lot of pain.
You want to leave?
It was. I did want to leave. Because we got married really young. And I think a lot of it had to do with fear. Like, I think we both were afraid that we wouldn't meet anyone else. Yeah. We wanted to settle down really fast. And I ended up losing a bunch of weight in the course of our marriage. Uh-oh. And I started to, like, just feel a little bit... started to feel good about myself.
Yeah.
I started to want to go out. I started to want to have a life that was different.
He's like, wait a minute, now I'm kind of fine.
Yeah.
Well, and I might find, like, somebody else.
It was like more about the fact that, like, I
got a future.
I wanted a life that was different.
You have,
like,
a future.
I wanted to, like, go travel, and I wanted to go have weird experiences.
Yeah.
Well, that's, I was going
to
ask.
Very much a, like, 9 to 5, go home and go to bed kind of guy.
Right. Were you guys sexually as explorative as you are as an individual? Or did that come later?
That came later because I didn't know that that was a lot of stuff I wanted to explore.
Right.
So I don't think some of that stuff I didn't realize I was interested in or liked until I was in other sexual relationships.
Right. I mean, that makes sense.
Because he was my first, and then I only had one other one during college when we broke up. And then after him, that was when I really started exploring.
Mm-hmm.
So, but really for me, at the very beginning, when I left him, it was only because I just wanted a life that was different. I just wanted, like, to go on adventures.
I just realized I can have a whole...
Yeah. Well, because, like, what you were saying... I'm sorry. Maybe this is going to be out of order. But, like, something you were saying about, like, waiting for your life to start when you didn't have a stomach, stomach, or when you liked it or whatever. I really thought that, like, my life would begin when I was thin. And I kept living as if I was going to be thin someday. Mm-hmm. And so what I was doing in my life was, like, going home, sitting, eating, not doing anything, not having a life, not going. I was afraid to go to restaurants because I thought they would think I was too fat. I didn't dress the way that I wanted. You know, I just didn't have a life. I didn't travel because I didn't want to get on a plane. And so once I started to see that there was a different life that I wanted, and I could, and that was possible for me. And it wasn't necessarily because I'd lost the weight. It was actually because of the confidence.
Right.
The physical size. That was when I started to just feel like I needed something else. And I think he probably felt a little bit like I had, you know, there was a bait and switch. Like, I think he was probably like, this isn't what I signed up for. And it just became really difficult and tense, and we fought a lot. And I also, like, you know, I wasn't in therapy, and I didn't have the sort of, like, ability to have healthy conversations or resolve conflict in a healthy way. And I think things just escalated.
You guys were young too.
We were really young. And I think it's also, you know, sometimes it's just not the right person.
Yeah.
And you think it's the right person and it's not the right person.
Yeah.
And I just think we were so young that we were, like, wanting it to work, and it just wasn't.
Well, and it's what you do. It's what you do. Like,
as a Southerner too, like, everyone was like, why don't y'all have babies yet?
Right.
Like,
right.
They
exactly.
weren't even fazed by the fact that we got married when we were basically babies ourselves.
No.
They were like, when are y'all going to have more babies?
Exactly. Though?
And we were like, give us a second. You know, so, it was the expectation too.
Like, I've brought only two guys home with me, but each guy that I brought home with me, everyone was like, this is the one?
Yeah.
This is it?
They're all just waiting for you to be the...
No, what? Like, that's not...
Yeah, it's crazy.
They just want you to have babies. Like,
everybody wants you to have babies.
Yeah.
My brother and sister-in-law have been married for... It'll be 6 years this summer. Wow, that's crazy. And they don't have kids. And, like, they don't have plans to have kids. And it drives... Like, my sister-in-law gets asked every single day when she's going to have a kid.
Because
she's
in
Michigan, and she's married.
And what else are you doing?
And they're wealthy, and they built their house. They have this huge house, and, like, they have a dog, and, like, why? That's
wrong?
The next step. Like, are you infertile? Are you, like, that's what people assume. And then one of my really good friends, Jessie Rosen, who we had on this podcast, she hasn't been drinking for a month. And she's married, and they have a dog, and, you know, they're, like, pretty financially stable, her and her husband. And every single time she goes out, someone's like, oh, you're not drinking? And she's like, I'm not drinking for myself, like, not for someone else. Like, what a fucking crusade,
I find that the questions have stopped at this point about babies. Because I got divorced 5 years ago. And I've dated, and I've certainly, I had like sort of like one really kind of longish relationship, and then the rest have been like a few months, 6 months at the most, whatever. But I feel like at this point people are like, just write her off. Like, I feel like they're just like, she's not going to do it. She's probably not even going to get married at this point. Like, just like leave the girl alone.
Get over it.
Yeah. Because half the time I answer in a way like, I get real defensive and I'm like, I'm infertile.
Right.
Which isn't really true, but I feel the need to make people feel bad for
asking
the question.
Yeah. I started screaming about it this year.
I'm not infertile. I feel like now I need to clarify because I'm like, I don't want to seem insensitive. It would be very difficult for me to have children. It would be a challenge. So I'm not like just using that as a shitty way to say it. But like, I do feel like the question is like, why don't you have any babies? Like, well, you don't know how hard it would be to have a baby.
Right.
And you don't know how expensive it would be for me to have a baby, which would be very expensive. And also like, maybe I just got broken up with someone. Maybe I just had a miscarriage. You don't know my situation. Please
seriously,
stop asking these invasive questions.
Have a baby. That's yeah, the whole responsibility, like, for like
back up
20 years.
So I think, yeah, exactly. So I feel like everyone in my life now is like, just save yourself the trouble. She's going to make your life miserable.
I mean, I think that's why I started screaming.
You won.
I think that's why I started screaming about how I wasn't going to have kids about like 3 years ago, and like how I wasn't going to get married about 3 years ago. Because
you told me that I'm not going to have any kids.
Yeah. And like, I think it's a defense thing a little bit. I think it's a way for me to just like be able to focus on my career. And I think like it also allows my brain to like let it go. Cause like, I'm just like, that's not going to happen, you know, but I could like, I'm open
right time,
to it, but like,
right person,
it also makes me feel like it's one of those things that I think people feel like they have a right to, they have a right to information about you and your body in a way that they don't feel that way, that they don't feel about men. Like, I mean, I, which is not to say that men don't probably get that question. I mean, I know my ex-husband.
I'm sure
did.
People ask my brother.
But,
yeah.
But it feels like a sort of more invasive situation when you're asking a woman about either her marital status, her romantic status, or her
body.
Body.
Yeah.
Because like, why do you think that's an appropriate topic? And the same way that a friend of mine is, she recently had a baby, and we were just talking about this when she was sort of just at the end of the pregnancy, that people touched her all the time or they commented on the size of her body. Mm. And it really messed
with her. Oh, you're having twins.
Yeah, like you're so giant. It's right. Like, that's not a helpful thing for her, for anyone to hear.
No.
Period. And I really am fascinated by this idea that people think that it's appropriate to just sort of comment on your physical anything or your choices, your life choices, because just women are here for everyone's consumption, and we're just all here to just
that's
satisfy you.
I
basically
didn't see it until you said it, because it was so the norm for us to say, oh, that's gonna be a boy because he's sitting down. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's gonna be a girl is sitting up. It's like, you're sitting here analyzing my body, my pregnancy,
right? Like, I'm attached to this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and like,
there's another human here.
Yeah, because I've seen several, you know, like, you'll be walking down the street and someone will be like, you're so big, well, you're overdue, you haven't
yeah, like, you're like, about to pop,
you're about
like,
to pop, when you're having that baby.
I'm a person who's like, insecurities from before I was pregnant are still present.
Yep.
And I don't become just a vessel the second that kid starts to form. So but I feel like it's pervasive in all aspects of the way women are related to, I think.
Yeah.
And probably even more so when you're not in a sort of traditional body either. Like,
right,
if you're sort of like overweight or trans folks, I mean, I think people start to feel a claim on you at
the
a certain
the things
point,
that people, you know, ask me about my transgender friends, they ask me about their genitals all the time, and I'm just like, I've never even brought that up to that person.
Like,
I've
why,
never asked
why
that person.
Why
do you
know? Why would you want to know
so
about somebody else's
bizarre problems? Bizarre.
Unless
I've never been like, hey, what are
you
your genitals? Like,
unless I'm about to interact with your genitals, I don't
mean.
Need to know
exactly,
shit about
exactly.
I mean, come on now.
And that's frankly, I still don't just give them to me.
Yeah,
or I'll say
it
right.
Know about
yeah,
it.
I don't
want
care. Just let me have them.
Use
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, also, I'll like talk about a transgender person, and I'll use their pronoun, whatever it is, and then they'll be like, "So are they?" Blah 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 to blah blah blah, and I'm like, obviously, like, what are you asking?
They cut
me?
It off. They still have it. All that, right?
That's
there.
Really what it's all rooted in. Yeah. Is what are their privates?
What are their genitals
look
like? Yeah.
Oh, so boring.
It's so boring.
It's so boring.
That's so boring. Like, do you want to talk about my vagina? Like, should we?
I'll talk about my vagina all day.
Should we discuss
my
vagina? I'll talk to you about my
vagina.
I'm
not interested in talking.
Yeah.
About Yeah. No, I'm talking about my, I do talk about my vagina and my period and all parts of me, probably more of often course. Than people need. But I'm like, you know what? That's,
it's me.
That's what you're getting.
Yeah.
Sorry. Not sorry.
Not sorry at all. Okay. Wait. So when you were married, where were you guys living?
We lived in New York. We got married in New York and lived in New York. And then we big moved city. Here. Yeah. Well, we moved to New York right after. We lived in Texas for a minute.
Oh.
And then I got really sick, actually, and had to move back to Florida for a year. And then after that, we both moved up to New York together and then moved to L.A. Together and then got divorced while we were here.
Yeah. So y'all withered like three states?
Oh, together? We were together for four seven. States, we were married 7 years. We lived in a lot of different places.
Okay.
He didn't come with me to Florida when I was sick. I went home for that by myself.
Is that when you lost a lot of weight?
No, that was actually the heaviest I ever was. When I was living in Texas, I gained 50 pounds.
Yeah, Texas
in 3 months.
Barbecue.
Hell
everything
yeah.
Big in Texas.
Texas, everything.
Oh, yeah.
Butter. Mm. Butter in everything. Mm. Biscuits. Everything Southern. Grits and biscuits are my favorite things on the planet. And so I would just, and also like I was pursuing acting and he had a 9-to-5. So I would just eat and I would meet him for lunch and I would eat and I would, and yeah. I was doing a play at the time, but like I just eat, you know, and grab junk food on the way to rehearsal. And I ended up gaining 50 pounds in 3 months and got super sick. I developed something called pseudotumor cerebri, which is literally a fake brain tumor. Like, it's like there's no mass in your head, but the spinal fluid collects in your body and acts like a tumor.
Jesus.
So it created almost all the symptoms of a brain tumor, but there's nothing on
and
an MRI.
And brain tumors are the craziest.
Yeah, and so I started having, like, I started forgetting things, and I started having... I started transposing numbers and words, and then I started having neck pain and then headaches that were like incapacitating. And then my vision started to
blur,
go double. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I went to the doctor, I went to the hospital, and they were like, there was a meningitis outbreak. So they tested me for that. They told me it was the flu. They told me it was an inner ear problem. It was right around September 11th. So they told me it was anxiety. I was misdiagnosed for like 3 months. And then had a spinal tap and felt immediately better. And that didn't seem to like send up a red flag for anyone. So I felt better for about a month and then I got worse again. And then at that point, my mom came to Texas and she was like, well, I've had enough of this shit.
Yeah.
And she like flew out, drove me back to Florida, took me to my eye doctor, my eye doctor, who was my eye doctor when I was a child, who happened to be like the best neuro-ophthalmologist in the Southeast, unknown to all of us. And he diagnosed me within 24 hours. And about 2 weeks later, I had a shunt put in. And what they told me was that I needed to lose weight. They were like, this is how you fix this, is to lose weight. I still couldn't. Like, I didn't lose weight again. I starved myself. I was on a liquid diet. I did every possible diet you could possibly do.
Man. Weight, a lot of times, doesn't have to do with that.
It doesn't. And the thing is, like, the problem is that because it was... sort of weight related, and there are a lot of people who have it who are not overweight, but like,
well, in the minute you're told you have to do
something,
the second
you're told to do, like, I starved, and my mom even called the doctor, I remember, because she was like, she literally will not eat, and I just quit eating, and I wasn't able to lose the weight. And so finally, I had the surgery because I was going blind, and the surgery saved my vision, and I ended up...
They cut in your brain?
No, I had a shunt put in the base of my spine.
Oh.
So the spinal fluid drains through that valve and then into a tube that goes into my stomach. It's no longer attached. It's actually weird. I've had it... It's been in my body for 16 years, and it long ago, no one knows when, came apart. And so it's just in my body because I've been asymptomatic since. And I talked to a neurosurgeon. He was like, for me to go in and like try
take
and
it
find
out,
it would be so much worse. He was like, just, it's part of your body now. Hooray. So I have this weird tube in my body, but yeah, so that saved my vision. And then the weight loss came later. I was pre-diabetic and couldn't lose weight. And I spoke to a doctor and I ended up having weight loss surgery about 10 years ago.
I love your mom, though. Your mom was like,
my mom was not having it.
She was not here for this.
Yeah, my mom was like, hell no. Because actually, the part I think is funny is like, so my ex-husband, then boyfriend, and I were sitting in a movie, and I said something to him, and he was like, stop it. And I was like, what are you talking about? He was like, stop doing that. And I was like, I'm not doing anything. He was like, your eye is moving around in your head. Stop it. And I was like, yeah. And I was like, what are you talking about? And apparently, like, my right eye was just, like, moving, and I had no control.
It's like you were on
and
Molly.
I couldn't tell because I had, like, double vision. And so I called my mom, and I, you know, obviously I'm not joking, but I was like, haha, isn't this hilarious, Mom? Isn't this funny? And she was like, no, it is not funny. What are you talking? This is not funny. And she, like, got on a plane the next day. She was like, oh, hell no.
You probably looked like you were rolling on Molly. Oh,
I probably did. Oh. He was really freaked out, and I had no clue because my vision was already blurry. Oh, like,
it just didn't.
He was trying to be calm too. Oh my god,
he was like, everyone was trying so hard to do the right thing, and in the meanwhile, like, I'm terrified because I keep getting like all these different diagnoses, and no one's telling me anything. Yeah. I'm trying to pretend like this isn't totally terrifying, yeah. Right? Like, I'm like,
we can find a solution. We can find a solution.
It's
gonna
be something else and make jokes about it, guys.
Everything's fine. Yeah.
Meanwhile, like, I'm weeping in pain, couldn't move. It was awful. And like, and I 5 years after the shunt, on my like shuntiversary, I had a like really like fucked up party where I made everyone fake two martinis and like. And like served them like
oh my god, I fucking love you,
panna cotta and like red velvet cupcakes looking like eyes. So I was like, cute. You have to like make it,
yeah.
You have to like
you
fuck,
do,
yeah. You know, because it was so fucked up. Mm-hmm. So, but that really, that was one of two like sort of life altering body moments that like really like launched me into the next thing. And then the weight loss surgery was the other. And so I had that.
Did you have that in LA?
Yeah, I had that here, and have not regretted it, even when I am throwing up everything I eat because I can't keep anything down, and I can't go on a hike because I can never have enough food in my body for, you know, to fuel
you
me through a hike.
A little bit,
right? Yeah. Oh. But I've never regretted it because in the 10 years I've had it, because I have the lap band, in the 10 years I've had it, I've gone through a divorce, a nervous breakdown, back surgery, 2 suicidally depressive episodes, 10,000 breakups, and I lost 140 pounds. Like, wow. I did not gain. I could not rely on food in the way that I had before. It really forced me to deal with what I was going through and, like, live in my feelings as opposed to
eating
them.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, I have been able to maintain my weight and lose weight and also, like, learn to like myself, because the thing is, like, I'm not necessarily the weight I wanted to be when I started. Like, when I had the weight loss surgery, I had this very clear number in my head, and I'm not there still, but I am at a point where I really like myself.
Yeah,
and I like too. My body. And like the last couple of guys I dated, because for me the prism was always through men, for better or worse, was because I always felt that men were kind of, I didn't have a lot of romantic relationships, so like, for me, men were kind of a barometer for me.
A validation.
Yeah, looking for validation. And a lot of that, I think, has to do with my marriage. Like, we weren't very good at making each other feel good about ourselves or each other. And
I lived in a relationship like that for 5 years. Yeah, it's really hard.
And in particular, like, the last guy I dated made it pretty clear that, like, he liked my body. And like the last two in particular, actually, like, they both were like, there was no like, I'm dating you, but like, not all of you.
Yeah,
there
yeah.
was no like, yeah. like, I hope you lose weight. We're going to just date till you know, there were, mm-hmm. they actively liked my body, and they touched me in a way that let
you
me
as
know
a whole.
That they liked
yeah.
my
right,
body.
Right.
And it was really amazing. And mm-hmm. like, and lovely, and I'm grateful to them because I was already there, you know.
Yeah,
I was already at the point where I was like, I like my body.
I was going to say that.
Which I think
yeah.
probably is
yeah.
why I kind of
attracted
them.
Mm-hmm.
But like, but it was so nice to not have to apologize or not feel like I had to
right.
apologize for myself with mm-hmm. those two guys. And I think that's something that I have always struggled with, but in the last few years, as I... It's such a weird thing because I would say that I'm not happier than when I was overweight. Like, in terms of my life, it's like the life I thought was going to magically happen to me did not happen. But I am more confident and comfortable, but that didn't come from weight loss. That came from whatever fucking hard work came around it. If that makes sense.
That's exactly what I was saying when you asked me what, how did I turn that corner?
Yeah.
I was like, just so much suffering.
Yeah.
And learning to deal with it in a different way. Like, I'm like, I'm not going to let somebody degrade myself more than me. I would degrade myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, I like that's myself. Like the very, yeah. I work on myself. I like myself because I'm sober too. Sober. I've been homeless. I've been through a lot of abusive relationships. And I'm like, I went through all of that and I worked on myself. And
right.
So I'm like,
and I'm still standing. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm still standing. I'm like, I got a lot. Then I got my health. You know, you for your health. I had, fibroids tumors. They took out my uterus and put it back in. Mm-hmm. You know, then I had two more surgeries on. I've been through a lot. Woke up in ICU. I'm a miracle, the doctor said. So it's like I've been through a lot. So I'm like, I've been through a lot. I'm starting to be thankful and like myself. And I've been through the same way. And it's like, I like myself. It feels good. And I've been, and it took me to go through hell, even right now, to do it.
That's how I mean, that's kind of where I'm like, God, fucking... I'm strong as fuck.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
I'm like, seriously.
That's basically what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, seriously. No, I mean, so I'm like, yeah, okay, yeah. I don't have time for your, like, if you're not here for this,
and you seem so happy.
Go.
When you came in the door, you just had joy. You were smiling.
Celia like, does not hear that very often.
Like, she came in, she was like, hi. Smiled the whole time.
Celia just definitely does not hear that very well.
I hope never I bring heard that out. In my life.
God, I hope Celia. I bring that out in you. I hope I bring the baby face cheeks and the blush and the smiles.
Thank you.
No, just, exactly. I relate to you so much.
I appreciate that. No, because I think at a certain point you just kind of, at least for me, I hit a wall where I was just like,
I hit a wall.
I'm so tired of hating myself.
So
this
tired.
Is so exhausting.
And being hard on myself. Like, I should be successful. I don't have this. I don't have that. I don't. I'm like, you know what? I got my health. I got my life. You know what I'm saying? I got some looks. Let's pull it together and do this. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's good.
For sure.
I got podcasts. I got people that love me. I got good people around me. I got comedy. I'm known as a funny comic. I just start adding up everything that's good. It's like,
I mean, that's whenever.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, whenever a man is like, well, I'm just afraid that I'm going to hurt you, I'm always like,
that's,
like, that's adorable. Oh, honey.
You're adorable.
Hold my beer.
Like, yeah.
I'm strong.
You're not going to do anything more than, like, I've ever done to myself.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, you can't.
Well, and I also, I that's it. Also so frustrating to me when they're like, I just want to hurt you. I'm like, what you think you are capable of is so much bigger than what you're actually.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's so frustrating to me.
The impact that you think you're going to have.
You're like this much smaller in my life than you think you are. Yeah. Which is not a way to be shitty, but it's just like...
It's the truth.
Yeah. Well, because I think a lot of times, like, sometimes people don't want to be the bad guy, so they won't say the true thing.
Yeah.
Because they're afraid to hurt you. It's like, it's going to hurt for way less time if you just
if you just would fucking
right now,
do it, yeah.
You draw it out. But yeah, I just feel like... I don't know. I mean, I think... It's, I guess maybe that the, I'm just trying to form the thought as I'm sitting here, sorry, but I think, like, so much of what I like about myself and liking my body comes from actually realizing that I am not my body.
Right.
Like, because I think for so long I thought I was. I thought that defined me, that defined what I was able to experience in the world, that defined the relationship that I was going to be able to have, that defined the career I was going to be able to have. And so, like, realizing that I'm not my body and I'm not the things around me either. Like, I'm not my apartment that I think is super cute, and I'm not my friends who are great but also, like, have their own life. You know, I'm not my job, which is really cool right now, but I've certainly had moments where I do not have a very cool job. Mm-hmm. So, like, or any money, you know, like, I think realizing that I am none of those things. Yeah. I am not those things and I am not my body is the point at which I was able to start liking my body. And I think that's the problem, is that we're told that we're our bodies.
Yeah.
And
we're told that we're our job. We're told that we're
our jobs, and we're told that you're your circumstances.
I'm not my circumstances.
You are what you are, whether you are poor, single, rich, happy,
and
fat.
We're all just sacks of organisms.
Membrane. You know what I mean? Like, we're just all sacks
also,
of membrane.
Like,
fucking figure it out.
Yeah.
Yes.
Anyone who's like, I got it. Because if they do, they're a sociopath. Yeah.
And they're also probably about to get hit by a car.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And I think like allowing myself to realize that is the thing that actually, because I did go through a phase of like just, I had a bunch of random sex after my divorce.
That's what you
and
should
I just,
like,
I went on Tinder and I just like boned everybody.
Yeah.
And everyone that I had sex with had some part of themselves that they thought was like the worst thing, that like would alienate everybody, right? And so do I. And I really thought that if someone saw me for real, they would run away. And my greatest fear is someone leaving me. That is, like, I joke that it's being buried alive. Actually, no, being left. So having that experience with all of those people made me realize that, you know, there is no
perfect
thing. Mm-hmm. There is no end point. Mm-hmm. There is no time where you will finally feel like you've figured it out. Yes. No one does. And everyone has some part of themselves that makes them afraid. And I think the thing that I try now to operate from is that, like, whatever you're bringing to me, I'm here for it. Whatever you have, I'm here for it. And I think that kind of relationship needs to be had with ourselves too.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like, mm-hmm. Whatever I'm bringing today, I've been eating like an 8-year-old dream diet. If they're alcoholic as well, for the last 2 weeks, like, just nothing but fucking, like, macaroni and cheese and, like, pina coladas and french fries. It's been a dream come true.
Macaroni and cheese.
Yeah, man. Like, my inner 8-year-old is like, thank you. I hope we don't die of a heart attack. But I don't weigh myself, but I can tell that I put on weight, and I really just, I'm like, yeah, but I have to just be here for that too. Like, yeah, I have to be as here for that as I am for the times when I'm like, nailing it,
killing it, yeah.
Because,
well, you are still killing it.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's just
a different kind of
killing French fries. But, like, but I just,
but it was good. That's what you gotta think. It was good while you ate it, though.
Guys, the Ace Hotel in Palm Springs serves some dope fries. That's what I'm saying.
It was good.
But
let's go to Palm Springs.
Yeah, do it. I'm like, spontaneous road trips are only spontaneous road trips if they don't happen every week, Celia. I just feel like you have to be as kind in those moments. And that's the part where you actually come to the love. Because you can't just, like, love yourself when things are going great.
That's what I have to do, be kinder to myself. Because I'm like, I could sleep in my car one night and the next day be on top of the world. It's very true. Defined success and this and I need that and how people look at me and think of me. I love, be kind. Be nice to myself. Stop being hard on myself. And every time, like you said, those people that you went through that had something dark about them that they thought people would be, like, repulsed by. It's true. Every time I walk up on somebody that I think more than that are more than me, have more than me, most, you walk up on it, it's never as it seems.
Never.
That taught me too. I'm like, it ain't no perfect. Like, you said, ain't no perfect life. Love yourself. Just enjoy yourself.
Well, that's why whenever something's happening, I'm always like, I'm gonna look behind what's happening.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I'm gonna look at the
final
thoughts.
I don't know. I feel pressured to say something really smart. I don't know.
What is feminism?
Everything
to you
say. What does feminism mean to you? Thank you.
What does feminism mean? That is such a big question. I think feminism is, I think it's really easy to sort of say, like, feminism is equality, right? Like, yes, it is. It's that. I think it's also the raising up of women. And I think it's support of women, even when it's uncomfortable for us to support them, even when they're not saying the things we want them to say. Exactly. And I think it has to include all women. It has to include trans women. It has to include people who aren't being the kind of women we would necessarily choose to be, or behaving in the way that we want them to behave, but like voting for Donald Trump. But we have to be for those women as well. I also think it includes sex workers, and it includes people who make us feel maybe traditionally uncomfortable. I think we have to raise women up. We have to support each other. I think that's what feminism is for me. It's more than equal pay for equal work, which is hugely important, but it is about championing women in all bodies and moving us all forward. I don't know.
That's very healing. Yeah,
that's great.
I just have been surrounded recently by women who seem really hurt in some way. Like, it feels like a lot of hurt is coming out. And I think that's a product of this political climate. And I think a lot, because I volunteer at this elementary school, and I'm volunteering. My mentee this time around was a 10-year-old girl who's really focused on how boys are more fun than girls.
That's so hard.
And I was like, man, and I know what she's talking about because I was her. I was the one who put boys ahead of girls.
Same.
Yeah. And I didn't want to be like, ugh, girls are so dramatic.
You know? Yeah, I would always say, like, I'm not like that kind of girl.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I'm not that kind of girl. Exactly. Mm. And
I wonder what it would be like in the world if girls were taught that girls are great and that they're valued and they are of value and their voices matter and they are given room to speak, because I see the product of that in my adult friends where we don't feel capable of speaking and we don't feel safe all the time in our own heads or bodies or spaces to speak or feel or think or share opinions. And I just feel so strongly right now that the kind of feminism we need is the kind that includes all of us and moves us all forward and raises us all up.
Thank you guys so much for tuning into the Act Like a Girl podcast. It's been Susie Dunn.
And Tracy Walker.
And we were here with
Celia Finkelstein.
Thank you for being here today.
Thanks,
Celia.
Thanks for having me.
As always, please check us out on Facebook,
Twitter,
Instagram, Act Like a Girl TV at gmail.com. And then there's also actlikeagirl.tv where there's the Get Involved page on the upper right-hand corner.
Let us know what you think.
Yeah.
Stay involved.
Subscribe to us on iTunes. We're on SoundCloud. anyway.
It's just an alternate pronunciation.
Stay tuned.
It's my Michigan coming up. Bye, guys.
Bye.